You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. In today's episode, the podcast will take a break from our normal interview format, instead presenting a palate cleanser, where UCB teachers and staff present official UCB news and updates, focus on a specific element of long-form improv, and offer experimental, one-off episodes. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking, and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast. I'm your host today, Kevin Hines. This is a palate cleanser episode where I'm going to be doing some, basically a coaching podcast. We're going to give notes to improv scenes. We're going to listen to some improv scenes. We're going to talk about notes. We're going to talk about exercises. So it's a little more on the teaching and learning side and less on the history of improv side. And I'm joined today by Molly Thomas. Hi, Molly.
Hi, Kevin.
Thank you for doing this with me, Molly.
Thank you for doing this with me, Kevin.
Great. So this is the first one of these we've done. I've wanted to do this for a while. And I sort of dragged my feet because there's a lot of work to it. And then Sophie, our producer, I told her this idea, and she pushed me until it happened. So thank Sophie if you like this. If you don't like it, blame me. But I don't know what we're doing exactly. We're going to figure this out as we go. Molly is basically, this is a pilot for a TV show that maybe we'll pick up if this works well.
Except it's on your ears only.
Yeah, and it's part of it's like a backdoor pilot because it's part of another podcast. You've been forced to listen to this because you wanted
it's
to hear
a spin-off
about Dave Blovband's improv history. Now you're forced to hear us give notes to
right.
people.
It's the Benson to UCB's soap.
There you go.
And
perfect.
If you're Connor Ratliff, you understand that joke. Yeah. And if you're anybody else under the age of 40, you don't.
Yeah, if you're doing improv, I'm listening to podcasts. I don't know what that Venn diagram is. But we'll see. So anyway, we've recorded some scenes with people who've done the long-form conversation podcast. We made them do scenes. They did them after an hour-long conversation. They weren't told they were going to be doing scenes. We made them do them. We told them we were going to be giving them notes in front of the entire internet. And they said yes. So there's a lot of awkwardness going to be involved there. But we're just going to do that. So Molly, let's start off by just hearing about your coaching experience, your teaching experience. Prove to me that you should be on this podcast that I invited you to be on.
Great. So I have been teaching for about 2.5 years. I've been coaching. I started coaching probably 2 years before that. I currently coach the touring company, the performers that go to different colleges.
Right. So we have a team of performers at our theater that we send on colleges and other shows. And they have to rehearse once a week? Is that what it is or no?
Not currently. For
during this season?
Well,
oh,
not
no.
currently.
Not currently. There have been times where that's been a requirement.
Last year that was the requirement, and then everybody stuck around. Everybody who's currently on Togo at this moment was also last year, so we haven't been rehearsing.
Okay.
But all last season it was once a week. Yeah.
Okay. And those people do rehearse, just not necessarily as a team.
Correct.
Every week.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And do you have any other teams that you feel like, whether they're house teams or indie teams, that you feel like you've had an impact on or that you really connected with or you spent some time with?
Yeah, I think I really connected with the Team Owl Theory a number of years ago when I first started coaching, mainly because I was meeting up with them every week. I was their regular coach, but then also because it was a group of people that liked being with each other. And
yeah.
I think mostly everybody on the team was really interested in getting better and being on a team here at UCB. They were getting ready to audition. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Did people get on teams? Some of
them?
That
was a team with Rachel Tensler.
She's very
Patrick
good.
Patrick Keane.
Great.
So, yeah.
So great. So good people on that team. Made it easy to be a great coach for them, maybe.
That's true.
I don't know. You made them great, maybe. Maybe Patrick Keane is nothing without Molly Thomas.
I don't know. He is also on Turco, so I guess a conspiracy theorist would say he's nothing without me.
Great. So let's get started. So what we're going to do first is we're just going to play a scene, Molly, and then you're going to give notes after it. I'll talk you through that. But I'm just going to basically ask you what notes you'd give that scene, and we'll go from there. Mm-hmm. So the first scene, Sophie, that we're playing is scene 5.
I can't get out of my romper, and I'm going to pee. I can't stop.
Okay,
I got to pee
down,
so
down,
bad.
Turn around. I'm going to help unzip you.
It's like
turn
a
around.
Little straight jacket okay, of fashion
okay.
around me.
I know. Okay. Hold on. It's the zipper is like stuck in the fabric. Hold on. I have to pull.
I peed.
Ew. Ew, there's so much. Is that how much
don't look at
pee
me.
Goes in the toilet? Because I didn't realize it was that much pee.
I think it was a combo platter of actual pee and then fear pee and stress.
Oh, my God.
Now we
have to go tell the janitor that you peed, and that's so embarrassing.
Not at Houlihan's.
Oh, my God. We have to clean this up ourselves. We can't leave the bathroom at Houlihan's. Ask for the janitor. Oh, my God. I still have a half rack of ribs on the table. We can't just leave the restaurant either. We got to pay the bill.
I'm covered in pee. But are you? Well, we can wrap up your ribs. We can wrap them up.
I'm just going to take the whole roll off the thing. Just put the, if I put the roll down, it'll just absorb
everything. I wanted to be a cute lady tonight.
You looked adorable, now you smell so bad.
I just wear my cargo shorts.
Right.
And
we said change it up.
And
this was supposed to be a fun night out with the girls. Maggie's turning 24. Right.
Okay, I'm just going to take my shoes off and just rinse them out.
Ew. Wait, puddled in your Steve Madden's.
Yes, I know. I just...
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, this
sorry.
One roll of toilet paper isn't even absorbing a third of this, so get the other roll from the other stall.
Okay, all right. Let me go get it.
This shows you how crappy the toilet paper is at Houlihan's. It's not absorbent at all.
I just don't think that's the top priority right now, since I've peed myself.
Well, what do you want? What is the top priority?
I just... trying to get out of here gracefully. Okay. Luckily, it's a dark pattern, so I don't think
right.
you can see.
It's true.
Do I smell?
You smell, but you have to be close to smell. And honestly, it might be that I'm also smelling the puddle, so it's hard to say.
That's true.
Here's what we have to do.
Okay.
I have a Madewell cardigan in my bag.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm willing to just let you wrap it around your waist.
I'll wash it. I'll take care
of
it.
No, I don't want it back.
No,
I really don't.
It's made well. It's so expensive and it's what I
got it at Buffalo Exchange.
Okay.
And also, I really, even if I didn't, I don't. You can wash it and keep it.
Okay.
And we'll consider
thank
it a birthday present 4 months in advance.
But, what? No. Wait. I'm
sorry. Just saying that
a
is
a birthday
that,
present?
No, I'm saying like
my,
if it was really from Madewell. No. If it was really from Madewell and you washed it, I would say, you know, don't worry about it, consider it a birthday present.
I get it.
But it's
I'm
from
sorry.
Buffalo Exchange, I don't
I'm
care.
I'm just really sensitive right now because I just peed myself.
I know. Okay, so you can wrap this around your waist. I will walk behind you.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to sit in the booth.
We're going to sit down?
Yeah, the Madewell, it'll absorb when you sit.
Oh my God.
And then, you know, maybe Karen can give you her jean jacket or something after you're done with the Madewell.
Are your ribs that important?
We have to pay the bill.
Okay, yeah, we do have to do that. I feel like we could do that on the fly, on the run, and
look,
get that
to go.
Look,
here's the thing. I was unzipping you. I was so close. The closest you can be to somebody, unless mm-hmm. you're making love to them, is unzipping their romper. Right?
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I was so physically close when you peed everywhere, and you're yelling at me.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just feel like we both came into this stall together,
mm-hmm.
and so we need to just team up.
I'm trying.
Be on the same page.
Okay.
And I apologize. I came at you hot.
Okay. And I apologize for making you have to apologize after you humiliated yourself.
This is something I've been saying to you for a long time in our friendship. Sometimes mm-hmm. you phrase things that just, it feels like you're coming at me. You know what I mean? Like that felt backhanded.
Can you repeat it back to me so I can hear?
Humiliated yourself.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't realize
sure,
that I
said
that.
Sure. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
Okay. But
I don't need to say it.
Right. Because that makes me feel like you're acknowledging
you're right.
that I'm a big idiot. Okay?
No, I don't think you're an idiot. I think Yeah, I think what you said was right. You okay. got you were scared you were going to pee, and you had to pee, and those two things combined.
Thanks.
There
Thanks.
Was no Kegels in the world that could have prevented that.
Thank you. A lot of people would say that, like, you know, when something, like, weird like that happens, like, I think one of the best go-to phrases is just, like, everyone's been there, you know? Have you been there?
No, I've never peed myself.
Great. Great, Molly. What are your first thoughts on that scene?
So, strictly speaking, it didn't feel like a game-based scene.
Okay.
I think that would be my first thing that I would say, right? There were a couple of different games going on, I think.
Sure.
Depending on the part of the scene. So I think where they landed earlier on was just how big the problem is. Like, there's pee everywhere, it smells, it's in her shoes,
yeah.
Right? It's just like, oh my God, this is so much pee.
It's unsolvable.
Unsolvable problem. But then they moved away from that. I think that would be my first note. It's like,
okay, do you have an idea of where, like, was there like a missed opportunity for a game early on that maybe got missed?
Yeah. I think even after the first moment was how much Caroline was reacting to what was happening.
So right away, like when she's like, just her freak out.
Yeah, I think her freak out for an adult woman to act that way is,
that's
right?
True, yes, yeah.
That's really unusual because you either like just sit down on the toilet and go to the bathroom and then realize like, well, I have to clean this out, but I'm an adult woman so I can handle it. Or you would wait the extra 30 seconds to get unzipped, and then you would go.
You think she could have held it, I guess. That's what we're hearing, this fictional character.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's unusual that she freaked out. I could see that. I did like that she just went and peed herself, that they just made that happen. It got very active despite being an audio-only scene. I wonder if there was a game missed after that, after the after just that moment of, it's too late, I peed. Is there that moment of, like, Alex not just letting her go home? Is there a game there?
Mm-hmm.
Where Alex is like, I have ribs, we have to pay the bill, I don't want to leave.
It's our friend's birthday.
Let's go sit back down. Where, really, I feel like if I was Alex's character, I'd probably tell Caroline's character to go home. Just, like, get out of here. Like, you wrap yourself up. This is too embarrassing.
Right.
I'll say you were sick and you had to, like, you'd try to get your friend out of there. But they're, like, Alex becomes very preoccupied. Maybe not enough for the game to be this with, like, no, we should stay.
Right.
Could there be a game there, I think?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
So there's a couple missed opportunities there, it seems like. There's a lot of good stuff, too. This is really funny specifics, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Alex had so many very specific details. This is the second time I've listened to it, which is true for all these scenes. But I forgot about all of them. Just like, instead of shoes, it's your Steve Maddens have filled
it's
up.
And puddled in your Steve Maddens.
Yeah. Yeah. So funny.
And it's a Madewell from Buffalo Exchange,
right,
too.
Buffalo
which,
Exchange. Yeah. They're at Houlihan's. They're not just at dinner. Like, lots of great. It just really fills that scene with so much.
Right. And I thought that was a fun pattern. I don't note on pattern that much,
yeah.
And I don't notice them as regularly. But I thought it was just a fun pattern that these two women labeled everything by the brand.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't just at dinner, like you said, or my shoes.
Yeah, and patterns make really fun, like almost sub games,
because mm-hmm.
they don't need to be as deep. They can just be like a fun specific. Like yeah, everything was about the brands. That didn't even occur to me. It conjures up a different picture. Hearing Steve Maddens rather than shoes. Not that I know what Steve Maddens look like, but I feel like
but
I might.
You feel like you do.
I might. I don't know. I don't even know if I've ever heard the term Madewell.
What?
What is Madewell?
You.
Sorry, I've just got gasps.
Wow. I mean, I don't own a single thing from Madewell, but there are so many improvisers that are huge Madewell heads. That's why I gasp.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know clothing. I know people look at me and they think I'm a fashionista.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
So let's say you had a team that was, this was like a lot of their scenes were like, this is not true of Alex and Caroline. But let's say there's a team where they just kept doing scenes like this that were just like funny and specific,
mm-hmm.
but a little meandering. How would you work on that?
Well, I guess the first thing I would want to diagnose is they're really listening to each other. Mm-hmm. They're having fun with each other and they're pursuing what they think is fun. They're adding all these specifics. So
that's so all things that's you good. See happening.
Yeah, I see all of that happening in this scene, and that's really good. So I would want to make sure that I don't squash that.
Yeah. I've done that with teams where it's just like you get so focused on playing game that they stop having fun for a while and the scenes aren't as good, even though they are structured better maybe.
Right, right. What I would probably do, this isn't an exercise, but I would probably just keep having them do scenes and I would side coach more.
Great.
So just say, so maybe after that first moment where Caroline was freaking out and Alex was helping mm-hmm. her, say like, okay, stop for a second. You guys realize that Caroline is freaking out, you know, whatever, like, or this reaction, Caroline feels unusual to mm-hmm. me.
Right. Sophie, let's play the first couple lines. I don't remember what they are exactly of their first scene. So scene three.
Everything in Marshall's today is on sale.
Get out of here.
But like more than it normally is. All right.
Great. So that's the start of another scene by the same performers. Maybe what would we, if we stopped the scene there, what would be a good advice for them going forward, or what kind of question or side coaching would we give them?
I think my first note to that would be, okay, are you guys are clearly peeing a pod. Are you two unusual or is Marshall's unusual?
Great. And what does it feel like to you? So you'd ask them that, right?
Yes.
What does it feel like to you if you had to tell them? They're like, I don't know.
I would say that it's probably more likely that they're unusual.
Great. Great. Let's, Sophie, can we play a little more of that scene?
Everything in Marshall's today is on sale.
Get out of here.
But like more than it normally is, all right?
Dolores.
Look at everything. They have a big sign up there, 20% off of everything. I think this place is going out of business.
No,
okay?
The Marshalls can't go out of business.
Yes, it's going out of business. I'll tell you why. Okay, because this Marshall's, okay, I heard that it's on top of not a Native American burial ground, but like a burial ground of
like a cemetery.
Yeah. And so they're
who's
like,
dead down there?
I don't know who's dead down there, but they've been saying that the Marshall's is haunted.
Oh my God. They shouldn't close it. They should sell stuff during the day, and at night they should do haunted house.
There it is.
They should
there
do haunted Marshall's.
You know what?
Dolores.
You should go into advertising. I've always said that about you.
No.
You know that. I've always said that.
Cool. So again, I would be like, great, guys. Are you unusual or is the Marshalls unusual? Is it true that this is on top of a Native American burial ground and that it's haunted? Or do you guys make up stories to justify a 20%
off sale?
Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to go through the rest of the scene. It's a very fun character scene, but it's all over the place. It follows sort of this trend. It's very meandering, but very funny. The specifics change a lot. But yeah, I don't, and I heard the whole scene. I still don't know for sure if it was ever built over a graveyard. I think it wasn't, but that never gets fully confirmed. We find out Marshall's is just moving upstairs and a Staples is taking this location. So that doesn't really answer any questions, I don't think.
No.
Great.
Yeah, to me it feels like women who are just really susceptible to advertising.
Yeah.
Right?
They get sucked in.
Everything's 20% off.
They believe the signs. They also believe all the rumors. They sort of believe everything.
Right.
Because they also,
gullible
I heard this.
Women.
And yeah. Almost, not quite gossips, but they're certainly talkers. I do think this is a tricky thing if when you have teams that play this way. I've coached like seasoned performers that are very funny, but because they're so funny, they can get away without playing game ever. Which you can get away with in some forms. It isn't as satisfying necessarily of having at least some scenes that are very game-based.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely is tough if you're doing a Herald because it's really hard to do second beats off of these scenes. You're just sort of like, I guess let's just see those characters again. Do you have any idea? I guess let's talk through just like how would we work on that? How would we really help these people, like, it's like you're funny. You have games, little games here and there. There's not ever being locked into. They're never being clarified. So you don't even know when you have them. What would we do to help them? Do you have any ideas there? It's not easy, I think.
Yeah, I guess, you know, off the bat, as we're talking about, the first thing I think of is just to have a conversation and say, okay, so our main philosophy is game-based play, and we all have learned it, and this is what we're looking at. Do you guys like this or sure. not, right? So if everybody agrees, like, yeah, we like it, that's what we want to do.
Yeah,
that's
assume they like it.
Right. Well, but it could be a different thing. You know, maybe everybody's feeling frustrated because they just, I don't know, whatever. I don't know, they feel like bucking it or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a different thing. But everybody loves it if we assume that.
They at least want to be able to do it. We have to assume that, like, this is something that they are working towards. They want to be able to do game-based scenes consistently.
Yes. Yes. But it is true. You could be feeling frustrated
definitely
with that,
could
right?
Be, yeah.
I mean, I remember, and Alex Dixon and I were doing two-prov for a while, and it felt, like, I remember times in my doing improv where it felt like, I don't know, like it wasn't truly organic.
Yeah. How do you do that? How can you make playing game? Because sometimes game can feel too mechanical or too strict when it really isn't, but it can feel that
right.
way. So how do we bring the fun back into like boring gameplay? Like, is there a good exercise or a thought or even just a note to give somebody who's like, oh, yeah, I can play game and it's boring, or I cannot play game and it's funny but messy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we tell those people?
Do you have something in mind?
I don't know. I'm thinking it through right now.
Yeah,
I definitely coach teams like this. I've done exercises where I task one person with staying on task. You know, if it's Alex and Caroline, I'd be like, Alex, your job is this, to play a single game. Don't let Caroline take you off track. And I would then task Caroline with just like every now and then try to mess her up. Change topics, throw something new in. Give a non sequitur, then give a few lines where you're sort of just going along with whatever. But every now and then, try to knock Alex off and force her to try to bring that back in. Almost like all my analogies are baseball analogies because I'm a horrible person. But like
only
it's
horrible
like swinging
people in baseball.
It's just because it's a sport only old white men watch now, I think. but like swinging a baseball bat with like donuts on it to make the bat heavier. It's like, let's make it harder for Alex to play game. So then when Caroline's actually trying to play game with her, it'll be easy.
I think part of it is this shared responsibility. That's one of the things that's fun but also challenging about improv.
Yeah.
That made me think I will have people do sometimes for warm-up scenes, I'll have them split into two groups, and one half, like one line, I tell them, okay, you guys are great improvisers, and then the other half I say, okay, you guys are going to be terrible improvisers.
Oh, that's interesting.
And which we actually did in preparation for hosting the jam. Not saying that everybody who jams is a terrible improviser.
We, meaning Higgins, your
hosting.
Yeah,
exactly, because it's a different skill to host a jam and to make sure everybody feels safe and to make sure that there's a game with everything. And so we would it's the kind of thing where you have the first person on either line, like the terrible improviser initiates the scene.
Yeah.
The person who's being the terrible improviser.
Sure. They're always too aggressive, terrible improvisers.
Yeah. Or they're silent and they just kind of walk out there or whatever it is. Like, and it's fun in that line to brainstorm all the ways that you can do improv terribly.
Yeah.
And so that's like a fun release. And then the good improviser has to just make sense of whatever they're doing, which is like a variation of what you were saying.
I used to host the jam ages ago. I loved it, other than like being late at night.
Right.
But I really liked it. I liked trying to make people look good or make their scenes fun. And the few times I've sat in with a jam, it's just so fun. And it inspired a workshop I taught recently that I called, I think, Improvising with Terrible Improvisers or Improvising with a Jerk or something like that. With the intent being like, you can't control what they're going to do. So how can you perform to make sure that scene is still pretty good?
Right. It's like you have to build the jar that their performance fits in.
And I don't know how successful the workshop was. I've only taught it once. But parts of it really worked well. And I like the idea of it. because I think like great improvisers. When I first started going to jams, when it was like hosted by Respecto Montalban, so it'd be people like Billy Merritt, Owen Burke, Rob Hubel. They were great, and every scene was good. But you'd see that the other half of the people were drunk and crazy and maniacs, and it was before people put names in a bucket here at UCB now. But it was just anyone could jump up on stage at any time. So it was chaos. And these good seasoned improvisers would just sort of make everything look pretty good.
Uh-huh.
And I was very impressed by that. So it's definitely something that is in my mind a lot, is how do you make those sorts of moves work? How do you stay so focused? And I think often it's like just keep it simple, right? It's like just react. Right. At the very least, that doesn't necessarily help you play game, but it keeps the scene feeling pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just sort of like, I'm just going to react and agree with everything you say, and I won't fight with you, even if you're fighting with me, and I'll kind of let all that stuff happen. And by doing that, the scene can't get too far off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that helps you have game, which is where we started with this conversation. It's tricky. If you're having boring scenes and making them fun, or having fun scenes and making them structured, it's so tricky. But there is something fun. Like, I guess let's go back to what you said at the beginning, where you said, I wouldn't want to ruin their sense of play, their great listening, the fact that they seem to enjoy each other. And there's something, too, that, like, you do want those moments that aren't good game moves. You do want those moments right. to happen where it's like, oh, I didn't expect this. You've thrown a wrench into this. And now I'm really improvising. But you just have to do that with that sort of mentality of like, but I'm still keeping an eye towards the whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That can be an interesting thing. Yeah.
Like you can put a ribbon on it, but you have to keep making the dress.
Yeah, exactly.
It can't be a scene full of ribbons.
And if there's no ribbons, like, who wants to wear that dress?
Hey, you know what? I'm going to use that seemingly very gendered analogy because you use baseball.
No, thank
you.
You're
welcome.
I get it. I'd love some more ribbons on baseball uniforms. Is that what you meant?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think it's a tricky thing. And I think if people are listening to this, it's important to note if you're coaching a team that they need to have fun as well as be good. And I think if you're doing a rehearsal and it's not fun at all, it's time to maybe do a exercise that's just fun.
Yeah.
And if they're having fun but not doing something, maybe it's okay for them not to have fun for a little while, to work that muscle and just do kind of go through the grunt work of like really working hard. But you don't want to do either one of those things for too long.
And I would say maybe this is – we've gone off on our own
sure,
podcast,
that's right.
But the hardest thing for me to coach is if especially a whole team is not having fun.
Yeah. A team not having fun is brutal. I've coached teams that have started to not like each other, not work well together, and it hits a certain point where I don't know
there's
what
nothing you
can
do. Yeah.
A class that's not having fun, I've had more success with. And I think that's because they're not necessarily all friends. They know there's an end in sight. I think it's easier to be like, I can have fun for 8 weeks. But if you're on a team, it's like, this is it. I'm always with these people and I'm now fed up with them, or I don't like them, or I don't like what's happening between us.
Right.
I sometimes have that teachers come up to me and they're like, hey, I've got a 301 or a 401. They're good, but it's low energy now and they're not having fun. Or maybe it's a lower enrolled class. There's like only 10, 12 people in it, and the energy's down. And like a 12-person class is plenty of people.
Mm-hmm.
But it can sometimes feel like not enough. You've got 8 people performing, only 4 people watching. And you're used to having 8 people watching, and like the energy's gone. And I always tell them the same thing. It's like do some exercises where they can just – that are kind of easy, successful exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like – these are exercises that anyone, or not anyone, but a lot of people will have a good scene out of. And I think of things like Oscar moment is one I often recommend, where it's like, and that's an exercise where you do a two-person scene and somebody at some point breaks into like a emotional speech that would be the clip they show at the Oscars. And I sort of think that's a fun scene that feels successful and the person leaves and they've worked that muscle successfully. They've learned something. But it's also rarely bad. Even if someone's a bad actor, they can sort of half do that and feel like, oh, I've pushed myself further than I have.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any ideas for exercises like that are just sort of like fun ones that you have at least success with when you're coaching?
Mm-hmm. I like, especially with a class because it's a bigger group,
the
warm-up groups of. So you have everybody walk around the space and then you'll just say groups of two and everybody has to run and find a partner. And anybody who doesn't have a partner, if it's an odd number, then they have to sit down.
Okay.
And anything that's competitive and has elimination. No, but it it makes people it changes the energy, so you have to run often or like grab the other person by the arm. So it makes people touch each other in this consensual way, right?
Sure,
and it's exciting.
Yeah.
So anything like that, or enemy defender.
Making people move around. I like enemy defender a lot when they don't get too violent. Some people start pushing and shoving. It's like, all right, guys. Enemy defender, for people who don't know, is the warm-up where everyone picks somebody in the room to be their enemy and somebody in the room to be their defender, and your job is just to get the defender between you and your enemy. And since you don't know who anyone picked, it ends up being people like circling around each other, running into corners, and then all of a sudden, you know, their enemies and defenders are constantly moving, so they have to keep moving. And they get exhausted very fast. Something else I like to do is just beat the hell out of the game without worrying about game as a weird energy helper. So it's just like, just tag outs could be fun for people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two people doing a scene, everyone else is on the back line, and I have everyone in the class on the back line if I'm doing it for energy purposes. And it's just like, you see something fun, tag in and explore that. And they should be real tags where you're tagging in and becoming a new character and they're taking you to a new place or a new scenario. But I don't care as much if you're playing game. I just want lots of tags. You know, I want people just jumping in and having fun. And sort of takes the pressure off. No scenes last that long. They're really short. There's moments of really good stuff that you can talk about afterwards. Everyone hopefully starts laughing a little bit and having fun. It's easier for me to jump up and play with them a little bit if I think that will help, because the scenes are so short. I'm not like doing a Herald with them, and it's not really a noting scenario. I'll do that as like a warm-up for classes that I think have been low energy. And if I do that for a few weeks in a row, that starts becoming a fun thing, a fun way to start a class. I've had success with that as well. Let's show another scene. Let's listen
to
another scene.
Show it to your ears.
Let's play the very beginning. First, let's play the first couple lines of scene 9.
Seems like a high tide is coming in. I'm thinking about taking the boogie board out and riding some of the waves.
All right. All right, Chet. I mean, dude, just do you, man. I mean, like, everybody else at the campfire is
just
worried about you.
Just want to make sure everyone's comfortable. Make sure everyone's having a good time. Yeah. And there's no reason to worry about me.
All right. No, it's just like...
Great. So that's two different actors. That's, I don't think I said before fully, but the first two scenes were by Alex Dixon and Caroline Martin. This is Joe Leonardo and Dave Bluv Band. So just the start of that scene, how do you feel about that? What would be your feedback at that moment?
I love all of the specifics. I felt like these were two real people and they were really listening to each other. And then we have that moment of like, all right, everyone else is worried about you. And then Joe starts to react to that. And I would say like, okay, at that moment, we're using that language of like, okay, this is unusual, or there's something unusual going on.
Did that feel, it felt a little forced to me, I should say, like the everybody's worried about you. It felt like it came out of nowhere.
Yes.
Because I don't know if anything Joe said or the way he said it made it sound like we should be worried about him.
Right. Yeah, there was nothing that indicated there was a problem.
Yeah.
I guess we did have you do you.
Yeah, right.
Right? So we have that, which still doesn't indicate that everybody's worried, but...
Right.
But also, it didn't seem inorganic to me.
Okay.
And so I could make the argument either way, but it didn't set off any alarms.
I mean, obviously something probably triggered Dave to say that line. Dave's not somebody who generally just kind of comes out of left field with something.
Right.
He sensed some reason that he was worried about Joe. it felt a little to me inorganic, but just a little bit. Just that sort of like, even the way he started, it's like, yeah, you do you. Go out and surf. And then I think maybe there's this moment of like, if Jill goes out and surfs, this scene's over because then I'm alone.
Sure.
So he's like, we're just all worried about you. And we'll figure out what that means later.
Right.
And even when Joe first starts replying, he's replying to the first part, the you do you. He's like, I just want to make sure everyone's okay. Hey, you don't need to worry. He like realizes as he's talking what was really said. And I think that's good. Even though I think Dave's move's a little inorganic, I think Joe dealt with it really well. Like he was thrown by it. He didn't hear it at first, but instead of just continuing to ignore it, he did it. He let it sink in and let himself react to it. And that's going to help this scene, I think, be more successful going forward.
Mm-hmm.
That like Joe's honored that, this move that basically Dave made, that I'm worried about, we're all worried about you. So Joe is acknowledging that there's a reason possibly for them to be worried about him, whether it's unusual or not.
And I think that that's actually something that I see. I mostly teach 201 and 301. And one of the things that I...
And 201, for those of you who aren't familiar, is focused on game. And 301 is focused on basically the Herald structure, group games, opening, and putting it all together.
Yeah. So mostly everybody is still pretty new at improvising at this point. And certainly with the focus of game on in 201, it's a lot of new information.
Yeah.
And one thing that I feel like I see a lot is that people will react to the first part of what somebody says, or maybe just the last part of it. Like, they won't react to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then information gets dropped. So if somebody just reacted to you do you and not we're all worried about you, and then they just move on, there's this, there's a gap.
And that happens, I think, somewhat because they hear that first line and then they stop listening and they start making their move because it's hard to do everything at once.
Right.
I definitely see that a lot, too. I often talk about students should, like, what's the most important thing you're going to react to in that sentence? If you're going to drop anything, don't drop that part. And off of Dave's lines, like, we were all worried about you, feels like the most loaded piece of information and require, like, if you're going to ignore anything, it's you do you.
Right.
Let's play the rest of that scene, Sophie.
Everybody else at the campfire is just worried about you.
Just want to make sure everyone's comfortable. Want to make sure everyone's having a good time. There's no reason to worry about me.
All right. No, it's just like...
I'm worrying about you guys, okay?
No, it's just that you've just been on the beach staring at the horizon holding your boogie board.
Exactly.
And just like,
you know,
you haven't been in the conversation pit for a while.
Well, you know, high tide only comes twice a day, so...
We're just all worried about you, man.
All right, well, there's no reason to it, okay? I just want you to say, like, want to make sure everybody's having a good time.
Great. I just wanted to make a comment real quick. I stopped that scene because I liked where Dave just repeated, we're all worried about you again.
Yeah.
The scene was getting a little messy, I feel like. And sometimes I think it's good just like, let's just repeat what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And get on, let's take a second and get on the same page. I thought that was a pretty, I think he did it out of instinct, but I think it's a pretty heads up move.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, hey, we've acknowledge this is unusual. I want to make sure that I reinforce it so we know what our dress is.
And what do you think is happening in that moment, the second section we've just played? How would you note that section?
Well, you know, I think Joe said, I'm worried about you guys.
Yeah.
But then in the next couple lines that got dropped.
Yeah.
It sounded like it got dropped. So there's this, okay, wait, are we peeing a pod or are we doing a straight man, crazy man scene here?
Yeah, it's a little of a tug of war. It feels like whose idea are we playing or who's right here? Should I be worried about you or should you be worried about me? Or I guess theoretically, should nobody really be worried or should everybody be worried? But it probably is one or the other. It's probably... there's one person who should be more worried about the other person.
And you know what? It felt like a little bit it's a little bit like they kept straight manning each other.
Yeah.
So Dave again repeated, we're worried about you. Joe said, I'm worried about you. Okay, so are we peeing a pod?
Yeah.
And then Dave says, you know, you were just standing out there staring at the surf for many hours. So again, he's saying like, but you're... behavior's unusual.
Yeah.
And then...
you weren't in the conversation pit, I think is what Dave...
Conversation pit, yes. being real nitpicky, I would challenge Dave to find a camping trip where people agree that something was called the conversation
pit. I've never heard that phrase, but I immediately loved it.
I do love it. I do love it.
I also love the line, high tide only comes twice a day.
I do. I really
don't know if that's
a
surfing thing or not. It just feels so, like, twice a day feels like a lot.
Right?
I don't know. It feels like, so you're not going to miss it. You get another chance at it, but it's very funny when he said it so melodramatically.
Yeah. I would also say, like, the math of it is you were staring at the surfer this long. High tide only comes twice a day. That's fine, man, but we know when it comes, you don't have to watch for it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We could make that what they're worried about, that he is too preoccupied with his boogie boarding.
Right.
Spoiler alert, it's not going to be the case.
Oh.
Let's play the rest of that scene.
Like, I'm worrying about you guys, okay?
No, I just said you've just been on the beach staring at the horizon, holding your boogie board,
exactly,
and just like, you
know, you
haven't been in the conversation pit for a while.
Well, you know, high tide only comes twice a day, so.
We're just all worried about you, man.
All right, well, there's no reason to it, okay? I just want you to say, like, want to make sure everybody's having a good time. Make sure everybody's having good. Everyone's
we're all having a great time. You organized this whole trip for us. This was great. You found the Airbnb.
Yeah. Can I say one thing? I really appreciate you guys worrying about me.
Yeah. Well, that makes me more curious into asking, like, wait, what's going on, man?
To know that I'm being thought of, you know, by you guys, it means the world to me.
Yeah, no,
I organized this whole thing. I organized this whole thing so we can all, you know, have the Airbnb. We can have a good beach day.
You know, Chet, I've been, like, really wanted to bring up, like, you survived a terrible bus crash.
Yeah, listen, let's not bring up the bus crash.
It's just you haven't even mentioned it once.
I didn't get
time.
A chance to text you because, the bus, I feel horrible about that. That bus crash, it took me out for, like, 6 hours. I couldn't text you. That I was going to be late, and I felt fucking horrible. Okay?
Fine. That's fine. Right? You were the only survivor. That's not why we were mad at you. We were just worried. I was mad at you at first because I was like,
because I didn't text.
No, you're fine. No, don't bring the boogie. Oh, come on. No, no, don't.
I get more sun chicks.
Chet, you're good. You're good, man. No, don't get more sun chips. Don't get more sun chips. We don't need more.
Oh, we get more. Okay.
We don't need more.
What do you guys want? Okay.
No, look, we just want to hang out, man. We're like, we've been worried about you all year. You know, the bus crash was scary. You were the only survivor. You've been like a media darling in the last.
I've canceled a lot of Anderson Cooper to hang out tonight.
And we just wanted to, like, you know, we were excited to all be invited out here. You know, us all friends from college. Like, we're worried about you.
Let's just hang around the fire, all right?
That sounds like a great idea. Let's
brought some logs.
Great.
You can throw in the fire.
Oh, awesome. Great. We're running low anyway. That's awesome. That's great.
Some Kindle wood.
Yeah, Kindle, man. That's some nice. Where'd you find that? I noticed woods in the.
I had this shipped from Alaska.
What?
Yeah. I wanted you guys to have the perfect fire, okay?
What?
I had this shipped from a tall tree in Alaska.
You had wood kindling shipped from the tall redwood trees in Alaska.
What?
Why? That just seems like expensive. That seems like an unnecessary.
There's no price. I want you guys. I want your approval. I want you guys to. I want to be part of the gang. I want to be friends.
We're all your friends. We're just.
Listen. One more thing. I want you all to be my best man at my wedding.
All of us.
All of you guys. Can you guys all be my best man?
I mean,
need to find a bride.
Look,
I just need to find a bride.
I'll find a woman,
but you can all be my best man.
I thought you were going to tell us that you had been engaged.
I have no relationship. I have you guys. That's it.
Look, okay. Listen, first off, let me get this out of the way. I subscribe to no, like, traditional bachelor, like, you know, best man scenario. I feel like if multiple people want to be one best man, that's great.
Man, that's forward thinking. That's why I want to be your friend so bad.
We've been friends since college.
We've known each other since college.
Yeah.
But you know, you didn't invite me to your birthday party. You had there's occupancy of the room, and
well, that was just because it was a small place. I was seeing Kelsey at the time. I just wanted to make an impression on her parents, but. look how that turned out.
I brought her parents here.
What? Whoa, that.
Remember you told me about that. Her parents are here. They're tied up and they're in the.
Whoa, no. That is not what I wanted this to happen. Kelsey.
Okay, and that's just a few lines left. That's a good edit point, I think. We probably missed an earlier edit point, too. A lot of these scenes run long when people are in podcast booths without somebody there to edit them. So what do you think about the rest of that scene?
So this actually felt a lot like the first scene that we listed.
Okay.
That we listened to, where
the Houlihan's bathroom peeing scene.
The Houlihan's pee scene. So it's like two really good improvisers having fun with each other, but just like kind of going all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I think that, when that moment happened, you survived a terrible bus crash.
Yeah.
That's Dave saying, okay, but ultimately this is what's going on. You're avoiding talking about the elephant in the room. That's our game here.
And I think as an improviser, that's also his move, just being like, this has been a little messy. We've been a little tug-of-warring. If I make a big, bold move here, maybe that gets us locked in a little better.
Right.
And I think it does get them better. I think the scene is better after that point. There, definitely it's a little closer. There are still little tangents here and there. But I do think that moment helps lock in the fun of what's happened already.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so after that moment, there's been a terrible bus crash. There is a little game here, right? The game of Joe still trying to befriend everybody, even though he should be more worried about what just happened to him. It seems like it's pretty recent, the bus crash.
Yeah, although I...
It should be about him.
But it was also mentioned that it was like months ago and that he's been a media darling for months. So there was even disagreement about, did it happen on the way to camping or did it happen 6 months ago?
Well, I would say the bus crash is the biggest move of the whole scene, mm-hmm. that endowment. And so probably that the rest of the scene should anchor into that somehow. So I definitely missed that months line. And I think like that makes that move not work as well. I think it should be that it was more recent, that he's maybe just come out of the hospital, that should his priority shouldn't be making sure his friends have a good camping trip. It should be like they should be worried about him recovering and is he okay and is he traumatized? Is there PTSD from this accident? This is not necessarily what they've played, but it feels like that's the closest game that they have.
Right.
Unless there's one I'm missing. Is there another game you think is in there? Or
no, I think that's the strongest
thing
that they have in that scene. I would also say, and this is not about this scene, but this is about other scenes that I've seen.
Yeah.
So if when that moment happens sometimes, like you survived a terrible bus crash, then... Because I think these two still kept it active. Like, we knew that the board had broken. They were walking back to the campfire. They had firewood, kindle wood, which some people call kindling.
Yep.
But what will often happen with newer improvisers is they'll just then start listing all of the terrible things that happened in the crash.
Yeah.
Instead of keeping it in the room, keeping it present, and playing game actively.
I mean, by the end of the scene, the game has sort of shifted into Joe just trying to please everybody too much. He's kidnapped Dave's ex's parents. He's shipped in expensive wood. He wants them all to be his best man.
He wants to go buy more sun chips.
Sun chips, which Dave has fun repeating.
Yeah.
And all that stuff's good. It doesn't feel like as rich a game as what they had moments earlier with the bus accident.
Yeah.
Especially because I think he's still trying to please them in the bus accident game.
Mm-hmm.
But we've lost maybe that moment. I guess if I heard this scene, we've heard it in three chunks, which makes it a little difficult. But I do feel like if that bus accident move or something similar happened earlier, maybe the whole scene is a little cleaner. Because it took a while before they sort of settled on that. We talked about how they kind of... They make some decent listening up top, but then it's sort of like little quibbling over who's unusual, who should be worried about who, until we get to that bus accident, which makes it clear that we should be worried about Joe. That's who we should be worried about. We should not be worried about the campers. It's Joe who we should be worried about. It takes us so long to get there that it's harder to play that, I think.
Because we've already passed up a couple of things. I would also say that... they're moving really fast.
Yeah.
In all of these scenes that we've heard today, they're moving really fast. And
in their defense might be this no object work. You can't you're not walking around a stage, and they're used to we're all improvisers who are used to being on a stage.
Totally. It's just voices.
Yeah.
And so of course that's part of it. But people also do play very quickly, I think, in general. There's this newer improvisers, there's this impulse, like if I'm speaking more quickly, that means I'm doing better, or I'll look better. And
a fear of silence.
Right.
Like and silence is bad, it feels like, which is not true.
Yeah, so often like it's great.
Yeah.
It's scary, but it's so – I would rather watch a silent scene that's very committed than a very talking head, very clever, quippy scene.
Two moments I really liked in the latter half of this scene are where when the bus accident is first mentioned, how quickly Joe accepts that endowment.
Mm-hmm.
That is a big thing thrown on Joe. And even before Dave's gotten it all out, Joe's like, I don't want to talk about the bus accident, which is a great way of yes-anding that there has been a bus accident. And the only way he'd be acting the way he has this whole scene is he doesn't want to talk about it.
He doesn't want to, yeah.
It felt like a really quick yes, if not an, but definitely a yes, an accepting of this move to give Dave more fuel to speak to.
I would say it is an just because of his behavior.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it as the and.
Right.
And then a little bit later, I forget exact moment it happens, but maybe it's the best man moment where he's like, all I need to do is find a bride. And Dave is flummoxed and doesn't speak for a while. He stammers and doesn't really get anything out. I like the truth of that. Like Dave himself was thrown, but his character also gets just totally tossed by what he was still reeling with, the idea that he wanted multiple best men. And now he finds out there's no wedding. And it's like that's a fun moment, a very real feeling moment at least. The moment of like, wait, what? There's no bride?
Right.
I forget exactly what he says, but it's a really fun reaction.
Harping on that moment, too, I think Joe says, I want you all to be my best man.
Yeah.
And then Dave repeats it later and says, like, basically for multiple people to be one best man.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, like, underlining right. that you said you want us all to be a best man, yeah. not, that's, you know.
As a group, they're the best man.
Right.
It's very fun.
That's funny.
There's lots of fun specifics in this scene as well. Good improvisers just drop fun specifics so easily. I'm hearing this and I'm like, oh, I don't use enough specifics is what I think. I don't know if it's true, but they're all just like Kindlewood from Alaska is so great.
Right.
And it opens up to some tangents, but it also opens up to some fun discoveries as well.
Right.
So, yeah, this is a new podcast, so we're still figuring it out. I think there's an interesting thing here where if I was noting these scenes, and you said it earlier, it's like, oh, I'd side coach them here. We can't really do that with taped audio scenes. We can't demonstrate how we would side coach them. But I do think if you're a coach out there, side coaching is an important, maybe one of the most important tools in your bag. The ability early in a scene to drop a little piece of note to help keep that scene on track. You don't want students to get dependent on that, but you do. If you can do that and help them have a couple good scenes, they'll see where they're going off. Particularly if we had these improvisers and this was a trend, we'd know it's like, oh, they continuously lose the game or they continuously miss an early moment. I can side coach them and help them make sure they catch it a few times so they'll see how powerful that can be.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that.
We can't do it.
We can't do it.
You can imagine us doing it.
We can talk about what we'd say, but they will not react to us because they were recorded months ago. If you are a coach, I would recommend trying to side coach. I think some coaches hate it or aren't comfortable doing it. And there's some performers that hate it. But I do think it's a thing you want to get good at. I think a trick to good side coaching is not to talk too much when you side coach. It's just a little bit here and there. And to do it early in scenes, not late in scenes. I don't think it's as helpful. It can maybe help a moment, but it won't help a whole scene stay on track. But if early in a scene you can do a little side coaching, I do think it's really powerful.
Well, for me as a performer, I think this is – like if you're a coach or a teacher and you feel uncomfortable about side coaching, I would much rather, if you can see something that I've already done
yeah.
as a performer that I should just do again, and you can just give me that heads up, it makes it so much easier.
Yeah. I remember being on a team, and we would do a whole Herald, and our teacher, or our coach rather, would say, oh, yeah, in the first beat you did this. And that's
right.
why your Herald fell apart. And be like, oh.
You could have saved us.
It's like, then why'd we do 25? I don't want to get the next 25 minutes of notes if it was all a building block at the beginning that kind of got knocked out.
Right.
You do need to know how to, like, correct and recover from bad moves, but you also want to be able to, like, start on the right foot.
Right.
And side
right.
coaching can help you get your team to do that.
Right.
Any parting thoughts before I wrap up, Molly?
No.
No. Me neither.
I mean, now I have 6 hours of coaching I could talk about. I feel like I'm just gearing
yeah.
up. But a final thought? No.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is the first one of these, like, sort of coaching palate cleansers that we're going to be doing. Hopefully I'll do a few more of these. If you liked it, please let us know. You can email us at podcast@ucbcomedy.com or tweet at us at @ucbcomedy. If you have thoughts on how we could do this better or different ways we could do it, send those thoughts in. Our producer, Sophie, will read those and send them to me. I won't read them directly. That's not my thing.
You'll have them read to
Yeah, I'll have them read to me. She'll scribe them onto a scroll and sit next to me and read them to me. That's how I do business.
And when you email or tweet, if you want to include the hashtag put the bow on the dress, not a bunch of bows.
That's a long hashtag.
Really?
280 character limit is going to really help you there.
Yeah, it is going to help
me. Put the bow on the dress, not a dress and a bunch of bows.
Not a bunch of bows.
Oh, not a bunch of bows. Put a bow on a dress, not a bunch of bows.
Yep, that's our hashtag.
Okay.
That's this podcast. If you like this podcast yeah. and you want it to keep going, then you need to tweet that
yeah.
hashtag.
Exactly. I mean, that's how things get done. Make this viral. But yeah, seriously, if you like this, if you want more of this, let me know. Encourage me to do it. I need that encouragement. Sophie can only push me so hard. If you're out there coaching, keep at it. Keep working at it. Have fun with it. And I think the big lessons today that maybe we talked about were don't squash the fun of a team when trying to make them structured, just like you wouldn't want to have somebody lose the ability to play game by having them be fun. You wouldn't want to go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And side coaching. Think about giving those notes up early. I think those are two big good takeaways from this first inaugural pilot episode of the Coaching Palate Cleanser UCB Long Form Conversations.
Putting the bow on the dress. That's the name I'm going to pitch for this podcast.
Great. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy. This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.